from TSN 690 in Montreal joins us. Maybe the most loved or hated media guy amongst Boston fans that I know. It's always entertaining when the Habs play Boston in the playoffs just to follow on Twitter. Tony, what's happening?
It's all good. Most likely most hated when it comes to how Boston Bruins fans feel about me, but that's okay because Canadians have won 6 in a row against the Boston Bruins, so maybe they don't have a lot of success against the Oilers, but they have won 24 of 33 playoff series against the Boston Bruins, Game 6 and Game 7 last year in the playoffs, of course, and a 4-game season sweep this year. So it's all good in Montreal.
Tony, before we get started, do you have any other stats off the top of your head that shows how the Habs own the Bruins?
Not really.
Okay.
I know they don't own the Oilers.
No, yeah, which is kind of an oddity. Although, you know what? Edmonton plays better against a lot of those Eastern teams because it's a little more freewheeling. The Oilers can't play a lockdown defensive game.
And, you know, it's funny because it just seems like the Montreal Canadiens players, they should probably just shut up instead of talking every time they face the Oilers. Going back to Guy Lafleur, who said he was going to put Wayne Gretzky in his back pocket, that didn't work out. Lars Eller called them a junior team, that didn't work out. I think the secret for Montreal is just don't say a word and play the game.
Yeah, did anybody run their gums today?
Besides me on the radio, not really, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking at the hat, I crunched the numbers on Carey Price, and I really believe he should be up for both Vezina and the Hart Trophy, man. The underlying numbers of the Habs, they're the only team currently in the playoffs that gives up 30-plus shots a game. You know, and Price is out-of-this-world numbers, leading the league in goals against and a .933 save percentage. When Tokarski goes in, they're basically a .500 team, and he faces the exact same amount of shots. So I think that just shows how valuable Price is. Are they concerned in Montreal? Is it the defensive play? Is it defense? That the four is not helping. What do you make of kind of the overall defensive coverage of the Habs?
Well, you know, I'm concerned because I think at a certain point you take a look at the stats and you can't just say, you know, you can't just use the good stats in favor of the Montreal Canadiens and disregard the bad ones and say that they don't mean anything. And if anyone's going to tell you, well, it all depends on the quality shots that you give up, clearly they're giving up quality shots because Carey Price has been a first star, I would think, like 13 or 14 times this season. And when he is, he's made some big stops. So Carey Price is not going to be a first star, and he's not going to be talked about as one of the finalists for winning the Hart Trophy if at the end of the day he's got easy nights and is facing easy shots. The Canadiens do give up scoring chances. I think there's a combination of things. Number one, you're talking about a team that is traditionally slow starters for whatever reason. Number two, I would say that the defense has had some ups and downs in terms of, you know, Sergei Gonchar has been good for the Canadiens. There's no doubt about it, but he comes over from another team. He's 40 years old. Tom Gilbert comes over. He's got a new team. The Canadiens signed him in the offseason. He hasn't really had much chemistry with, you know, anybody, and the Canadiens got Markov and Subban paired together, and then at that point, you can shuffle all the other guys around. Alexei Yemelin has been up and down. There's been some growing pains for Nathan Beaulieu, who's just, you know, in his early 20s. So I think the Canadiens lack a number three who can play a good, solid 23 minutes. That's number one. Number two, they lack good starts. I don't know how they're going to change that, but Michel Therrien is going to have to put his finger on it and be able to find the recipe that's going to work. And, look, I think if they can fix those two things, getting off to a better start and maybe finding a defenseman who can give them a solid 22 or 23 minutes in a zone, I think they'll be better off. But, you know, guys, if I can just pick up on Carey Price, I not only think he's the best goalie in the league, I think he's the best player in the world.
Well, Tony, you wouldn't get a lot of argument, at least not from our booth today. But I think you hit the nail on the head. The starts are an issue, but the personnel, when I get beyond the top two guys on that defense, I go, meh. You know, I mean, we know Tom Gilbert here. They're not bad players, but yeah. Time stops for no player, including a guy who's been class in this league in Gonchar. You've got to, I think the Habs have to add a body who, like you say, if he's not a pure shutdown guy, at least a reliable 22, 23-minute guy to that mixer, they're not winning anything.
And, you know, in Montreal, there's a lot of talk if you're going to add a one player before the March 2nd deadline. Is it a defenseman or a forward? And I know that a lot of people think, yeah, maybe a forward because Max Pacioretty could use some support. And in the past month, if Pacioretty's not scoring or Galchenyuk's not scoring or the defense isn't scoring, the Canadians don't score too many goals. I, for one, though, really believe it's a defenseman. I think defense wins championships. I think you play to your strengths. Obviously, their strength is goaltending. And if they can solidify that with a better personnel on D and a better, tighter defensive system, I think eventually the goals will come. It'll be, you know, they'll probably have a tough time getting them. But when you play solid D, you always end up having chances to score goals. You know, the New Jersey Devils, if they won the Stanley Cups that they won, then you can obviously win with defense and goaltending in the National Hockey League. You take a look at the New York Rangers. They didn't have much offense last year. They made it to the Stanley Cup final. Did they come up a little short? They did. But at the same time, once again, if I had to, in an ideal world, the Canadians add a right winger with some muscle who can score, and they add a stay-at-home defenseman. But if it's going to be one or the other, I think they need a D-man.
More of a left D-man than a right?
That's a good question. I would say, all depending on what you want to do with your pairings. If Markov and Subban stay together, that's one thing. And if Markov and Subban are actually split up, because you can have that luxury actually at that point if you end up bringing in some depth. Pardon me. I would say a right would probably be preferred.
If that's indeed the case, have you heard anything specific about interest in Jeff Petrie? Don't know if he's a rental or if he could be signed, but it's a thin crop out there now of guys who are available. He's a minute eater.
You know what? I haven't heard anything in regards to Petrie, but I mean, the one thing that Montreal media is talking about today, of course, is Marc Bergevin rarely takes in morning skates. And there you have it this morning. He actually sat down in the stands and sat alongside Craig McTavish, and they had a chat. So it's possible that his name came up. But, of course, you know, you're taking a look at the Canadians and who could be a partner, and you're thinking maybe Arizona and maybe Keith Yandel, and whether or not Yandel's the prototypical guy that Canadians. Look, I wouldn't say no to Yandel, but they would need a stay-at-home guy. And at the same time, you know, Marc Bergevin has said that he's going to stay the course. He's going to go out and he's going to try and improve his team. But if it means giving up on a prospect that he feels highly about, he's not going to pull the trigger. So he's probably looking at a rental.
Tony Marinaro from TSN 690 joins us. Tony, looking at, you know, Pacioretty, I think, is third in the NHL in shots. Clearly, he fires a lot of shots on goal and misses the net a ton, which most of the top shooters do. You know, you talked about the big right winger that they need. Do they have good enough playmaking centers in your mind?
I think they do. David Desharnais is, look, there's always question marks surrounding David Desharnais. We're talking about a 5'8" undrafted player, and there will always be some question marks surrounding him. I thought he answered a lot of those questions last year in the playoffs, because when the Canadians were down in Game 6 against the Boston Bruins, I thought he had a good game in Game 7 as well. Fed Pacioretty for the winner. Ultimately, he comes up short against the Rangers, and everyone says, well, Desharnais is not good enough. But, I mean, there's not too many Montreal Canadiens that had a good series against the Rangers, with the exception of Rene Bork and Dustin Tokarski. But I think to answer your question, yes. Look, David Desharnais is a good playmaker. He's found instant chemistry with Max Pacioretty. You put the right winger that would be coming to Montreal, if there is one, alongside Thomas Plekanec, he's a very, very good, sound two-way hockey player as well. When it comes to Selke candidates, he'll always find himself in a top 10 list in the National Hockey League. Lars Eller has somewhat underachieved. Actually, he has underachieved from a points perspective, but he shows you some flashes of brilliance every now and then and some creativity. He's engaged. I mean, he's pretty reliable. Alex Galchenyuk is a guy that can play center. It looks like they've taken the decision that he's going to finish off the rest of the season here at left wing. But yeah, to answer your question, I think the Canadians are okay at center. They don't have an Anze Kopitar, and they don't have a Jonathan Toews, and they don't have a major league centerman, but it's a centerman by committee. And I think overall, if you take a look at their four centermen, they're in a pretty good spot.
Tony, you mentioned Galchenyuk, and there's always interest in his name. in Edmonton, given his draft year and Yakupov. Where's he at in your mind? You've seen him for a while now. Points aside, we can read the points totals.
Yeah.
How's he coming along in terms of development?
Look, in Montreal, there's a lot of people that want you to become a star right away. And, you know, there's so much pressure on Carey Price early on in his career. And if he had a bad game, it was, well, he's going to be a bust. And you have a couple of people on Alex Galchenyuk saying that he should be further along 3 years into the National Hockey League. But, guys, he is just 20 years old. And keep in mind that his last year of junior hockey with Sarnia as well, he missed the entire season, of course, because of the injury. I mean, he still is very raw, still is very unpolished, but he does things that you see the stardom in him. And it's going to, you know, his star is going to shine for a long, long time in this league. And, you know, right now he's comfortable, more comfortable at the left wing position than he probably is at center, even though I think the Canadians had a record of something like 11-2-1 or something like that, when or 10-3-1 in his 14 games that he did play center. So they were very good with him at center. He was improving in the dot. He was improving in his own zone. The one thing this year is that he put on some muscle, and he's been a more physical player. He's been harder to actually bounce off the puck or take off the puck. And, you know, so he's coming along slowly but surely. And so for me, he's on a constant growth and a constant progression. I think next year the plan is going to be to actually start him at the center ice position. You know, they probably didn't want to give him too much responsibility early on and make him think a little bit less on the ice. I think the Canadians have handled it well with Galchenyuk. I think he's handled it well. And to answer your question, I think he's going to be a star in this league for a long time.
When are they going to move him to the middle, though, do you think?
At the start of next season. Yeah. Look, if someone goes down with an injury, he'll fill in. But he's made it clear to the coaching staff that, you know, he's more comfortable right now at left wing.
So now, would he want then, like, the whole preseason and because it's hard to just go play center. I don't care if you've even got a few years NHL experience. Like, there's so much more responsibility in the defensive zone and really even in the neutral zone for centers now than there ever has been. I think he's taken 115 faceoffs this year or something like that for the Canadians. I think fifth on the team. So obviously, you know what, and he's around 48% for a young guy, which is normal. But in the times that he has played center, is it the awareness, Tony, that he just doesn't have like most young guys? Why are they sheltering him?
You know what? He's a poor man's Malkin. So I'm not going to say he's an Evgeny Malkin, not yet in his career. Those would be pretty big skates to fill. But he's a poor man's Malkin. He plays a lot like Malkin. And he likes, when he takes the puck, he likes to take charge and he likes to lead the offense. And, you know, sometimes centermen are for the most part, I think they're more known as better playmakers than they are goal scorers. And you just would have to slow it down a little bit, I would think, in order to be able to see the ice a little bit better and see where his teammates are going to be. It seems like his first instinct when he takes the puck is take charge and want to go out there and be the difference maker and be the scorer. And by all means, if that's his kind of game right now, he is probably more suited at left wing. So, look, only time will tell. The plan has always been that Alex Galchenyuk was going to play center. Clearly, if something happens next year and Galchenyuk says, you know what, guys, I've given it some thought and I want to play left wing, that would be that would be quite a curve, okay. Curveball for the Montreal Canadiens if that would happen, and quite a twist. But like I said, I think he's going to have to slow it down a little bit, look for his teammates a little bit more. Right now it seems like he's trying to do everything very, very fast.
He's an RFA, Tony. What numbers do you think he's going to get in his next contract?
Well, it's interesting because the Canadiens a couple of months ago signed Brendan Gallagher to a six-year deal with a cap hit of $3.75 million. And these guys pretty much very similar, very close in age, and they're real good buddies, and they've played together on a line for a while. And you would have thought that, you know, they got Gallagher done, they'd probably get Galchenyuk done. But I'm guessing that, you know, the Canadiens would love to lock Alex Galchenyuk down to a similar kind of deal. And, you know, one of the things the Canadians have done is at the forward position, and I know that Thomas Plekanec is the highest paid forward at $5 million, but right under Plekanec was Max Pacioretty, who was making 4.5. And I don't think the Canadiens wanted to give Gallagher more than 4.5. And I don't think they'd want to give Galchenyuk more than 4.5. And with what he's accomplished thus far, I don't think he would get 4.5 either. Yeah. So having said that, I think, you know, even though the Canadiens would love to sign Galchenyuk to a long-term deal the way they did with Gallagher, I think Galchenyuk and his agent Igor Larionov would be looking at a bridge. And if he's looking at a bridge at that point, I would think that he would be close to $4 million.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what he gets in the offseason for sure. Tony, always a great pleasure to catch up with you. Enjoy the game tonight.
Hey, guys, your streak over the Habs ends tonight.